Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is out of time.
Which direction we are going?
Direct me El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Reached a tipping point.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight is a very special, special episode of The Tipping Point where we're going to pay tribute to Paul Adams. And I'm really excited. I know Larry is a combination of excited and exhausted and frazzled, but it is all coming together. I mean, I was going to throw it out there, Larry. 30 minutes ago or so, we didn't really have a show. And, but through some great happenstance, as well as Larry busting his ass the last half hour, we've managed to put together what I think is going to be a really wonderful tribute to Paul Adams. How are you doing tonight, Larry?
We can only hope that it will work out well, but I'm really happy that people are able to call in. I think it was really, just for some folks, it was tough getting this together schedule-wise, but
sure.
We got some folks who knew Paul from later in his career and early in his career, and I think this should be fun.
I was particularly happy. You know, we would have loved to have, I mean, I'll put it out there because that's what I do. I would have loved to have Bert Prentice on here, but, Paul Adams, I think people need to realize, especially if you didn't know who he was and what he meant to wrestling, not just in Tennessee, but in general. A lot of people were very close to Paul. He was that kind of personality. He was the guy that was very outlandish on the surface, but very caring behind it. And, you know, people are going to react in grief a number of different ways. And this didn't happen all that long ago. So I certainly don't blame Bert Prentice for not wanting to be on, but I'm really thrilled that David Young is going to be on. I think, that's his best pal. And I'm just looking forward to what he has to say. And a number of other people who are going to call in. Larry, do you have a list of people that are going to call? And I mean, what does that tell you that you were able to just mobilize people on the instant that were happy to talk about Paul Adams and be a part of it?
A lot about Paul. And we have an early run-in call right now, joining us from the West Coast, Dan Masters.
Oh my God.
Well, I'm not running very far, but unless the authorities are on the line. But I think when Vorto Walker took me to the sawmill, the legendary popcorn machine was short-circuiting the lights. When I first met Paul Adams that day. And I asked him, I said, well, what's going on? Why does the power keep going out? He said, every time someone goes to the concession and buys a bag of popcorn, they throw it in the microwave, and the entire production shuts down for 30 seconds. Cameras, lights, everything.
That's true.
He says, that's just what we've got to work with. But don't worry, you'll have your money at the end of the night. What a good time. Paul was always great. He would, you know, take us out after. We traditionally would have a good time on the way to Nashville from Savannah, which was about an 8-hour trip. So by the time we got there, I think Paul knew and we knew that we may not be the best for a corporate operation doing television on a national level. Somehow Paul got that and afforded it to us. And he always said, when that red light comes on, both of these guys do business. Now, when the light's not on, can't count on them. But Paul was always great to us, and so much so that when Marquez asked me, he said, do you know anyone in Tennessee? I've got a show I want to put on. I said, there's only one person I can think of for you to do business with, and that's Paul Adams. So that's how they hooked up and started doing their thing.
Mm. How did you hook up with Paul Adams, Dan?
Vordell asked me, he said, do you want to go to Nashville? I'm going to Nashville to work for a guy. I think he'll pay you something. I said, okay, I'm up for the ride. I got to really know him that night when we we were out till 5 a.m. and I ended up with no clothes on, and they saved me in the streets of Nashville. It was always a good time. Paul never let us down. You know, there's a lot of wrestling promoters. You go work for them, and they let you down. They may have you drive 8 hours, and you end up leaving with nothing. But Paul, not only did he give us the funds to get there and back, but an open tab, a meal, and the coverage. I mean, Larry, you could probably expand on it, but Paul got the television from Nashville to air seemingly around the world at one point, right?
Yeah, that damn thing aired in Long Island, New York, for a while, and they got a healthy viewership at one point in time.
And some international distribution that he personally put together. And if you think about it, I was watching some stuff on YouTube. Paul Adams was like a part of that disastrous. What was that pay-per-view where he managed the Samoans? It's on there.
Heroes of Wrestling.
Heroes of Wrestling. But if you really look around, I mean, Paul did a lot of things people, they just wouldn't know, you know?
Yeah, and we're.
I was watching the NWA Power program before this call, and I can tell you he would have been an ace for that. I mean, could you imagine him behind the scenes or on camera with the NWA today?
Oh, yes. What an asset he would have been for them. Yeah, yeah.
He would have been a perfect fit.
Yeah.
So we'll miss Paul Adams, you know?
Yeah.
Really will. I look forward to hearing the rest of the night's calls and thinking about the great times we had together, because wow, I can't think of a bad time I ever had with Paul, that's for sure.
Thanks for calling in, Dan.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dan, it's awesome. It's amazing.
Thanks. Yep, naked in the streets of Nashville. So anyway, let's you were saying
I mean is right now that's leading for the Paul Adams biography title. Naked in the Streets of Nashville, the Paul Adams story. We'll see if anybody comes up with anything better throughout the night.
Well, the thing of it is after Paul died and people began posting this, that, and the other, it just brought up back all these memories, like what he just said, like, oh, there was that, and there was that, and there was that, and there was that. It was quite a scene. There was the night in they taped in this town near Nashville. God, I don't even know how they went up there. Dash Wilder was at the taping, and everybody went to a bar afterwards. And we're all in the bar, and while we're in the bar, somebody breaks into their truck, steals all the footage they just shot. They lost the whole night's of footage. While everybody was in there drinking. Just crazy stuff.
Yeah. Something that I was taken with in your, by the way, if you have not read Larry's Paul Adams tribute, it's gorgeous. It's gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com. You should be going there anyway, but especially to read that. Something that I thought was really notable, and I'm glad that you put it in the report, it's something that you had told me, and I'm glad you put it in there, was that, I mean, so did they bring him up to Stamford recently to talk about something?
So the last time I talked to Paul, he said he'd been there to a meeting. I wasn't, about some type of a job to talk to them. They had contacted him back in January and then called him again, and he was concerned about whether or not his back, because he did have, you know, really bad back problems going back a long way.
Yeah.
He wasn't sure if he was going to be able to, it was going to involve travel. I assume it was in production. But, you know, he was real happy that they even contacted him, because he'd been out of wrestling for a while.
Right. I mean, but this is the age in pro wrestling, I think, where people are finding out, like, any kind of touchstone you can have to legitimacy. Right now, it's a credibility fight. It's about market share and a credibility battle. You know, AEW uses Tully and Arn in this great way possible. The NWA knocks it out of the park doing studio tapings that take you back 30, 40 years, right? Like, everything is about authenticity right now. I think that's the thing that nobody's really talking about. And it doesn't surprise me in the least. Can you find production people to do whatever in all kinds of fields? Of course you can. So why do you want Paul Adams? I can only imagine you want a link to authenticity. And he had that in spades. I was going to ask Stan Masters and didn't get to, but I mean, people like Paul Adams, those kind of like crazy guys that still managed to have it together and were able to just, you know, they were equal parts snake oil salesmen and, you know, carnival barkers and everything else. Those guys are going. Those guys are disappearing. And Paul Adams, I mean, it's no shock that a number of people feel very strongly about him and have such great stories.
Well, what Dan said about the power going out at the sawmill when they ran the popcorn machine, when they ran the microwave. I mean, Paul was one of those guys you'd want who could do a little bit of everything. When Mike Henry comes on later, he'll talk about, you know, the stuff from the Northeast, but he could do a little bit of everything and always had to piece things together by hook or by crook to get things done, you know. And so he was a really good guy if you wanted somebody who could improvise.
Who are our guests going to be, by the way? We didn't get a chance because Dan called in, and I thought Dan calling in was perfectly timed. So we have Mike Henry, and so we've talked about him, and David Young. Who else is going to come
in? And Scott Hensley.
Awesome.
And Saw TV announcer Michael Graham.
Man, oh man, oh man. Something that I told you I was going to tell you reactions that I got to the piece that you wrote. And one of them, I won't necessarily put names out there, but this person said that, and I thought, oh God, you know, it was very touching. They said, you know, all I could think of when I was reading what Larry wrote was that Paul Adams would have loved to have read it. And they said, like, I hope that somebody will write something about me that's anywhere close to that good. And I thought, man, that's about the highest praise that you can give. I'm big on those kind of memorial essays. Dave Meltzer has written a ton of great ones. It's the only reason I kept up an Observer subscription, honestly. And I think Mike Moynihan writes beautiful ones, and you wrote one for Paul Adams. I mean, and you know, that's if that's your like holy trinity of wrestling writers, obituary wise, I mean, you couldn't do much better than that. So it was really stellar. I think it really walked the line of maybe you didn't know him, so I'm going to introduce him to you, but also, and if you did know him, then, you know, here's stuff that you may not have known. So I thought it really had something for everybody, no matter how much or how little you knew Paul Adams. It really gave a nice, complete picture of him, in, you know, without going on and on and on. So it was very, very effective.
Thank you. And I will tell you, it was therapeutic for me to write it. I'll say that this certainly touched me, and it touched me that Paul died. It touched me in a different way, since, you know, what the reason I've been away from doing any of these shows for a while is that my brother passed away under very difficult circumstances. So just in general, I've been like dealing a little bit more, not a little bit more, a lot more with death. So I think that, and the other thing is that, you know, I really wouldn't have been able to do that piece. Part of what really got me going on it was the online conversation I had with our first guest, Mike Henry, who told me, you know, all kinds of things about Paul's early years that I didn't know. And that really kind of helped me, you know, bring it together. And maybe this is a good time. He's on the line now. Maybe we should just bring him on.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's bring him on, please.
Okay. Okay, I think we got him. Mike Henry,
evening, gentlemen, how are you?
Point.
Evening, gentlemen, how are you?
Oh, good evening. Good evening. Mike, my name's Stephen, by the way. I'm just going to ask you a question right off the jump just to get us kick started.
Sure.
So if somebody said to you, like, I don't know who Paul Adams, like, give me, you know, I don't know who Paul Adams is at all. I mean, give me a story that succinctly kind of like, to you, sort of really encapsulates him in this, in a great way.
Oh my God. Where do I start? Well, I heard you guys talk earlier about Paul being on the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view.
Yes.
Well, originally, Bill Stone, who was the producer of the show, didn't want Paul on the show. He was saying that, why would we want to have somebody on here that's not a legend? So, of course, at the time, Michael O'Brien wanted a old-school type manager, and we got Paul on, and Paul worked with us from the beginning of Northeast Wrestling. So everybody at that show had a specific job. And, of course, if you knew how that pay-per-view went with disasters, it was crazy. But
yeah.
Paul was in charge of booking the Samoans, which at the time we had Rikishi and Samu on the show. And the Samoans come in gangs. They come with family. So the kids come, the relatives come, everybody comes. So we had a gaggle of Samoans at the pay-per-view. Now, everybody was staying at the hotel, and it was Paul's duty to make sure that, you know, everybody got their tickets for the show, for the kids, and everybody else. So it was the day of the show. Paul did his match. And all of a sudden, we were on the headsets, and we hear Bill Stone say, there is a problem at the buffet at the hotel at Casino Magic. The Samoan family is tearing apart the buffet. So I'm like, okay. And Michael is like, okay. And so we had to call Paul, and he had to go straighten out the situation at the buffet. Let's put it to you this way. We didn't see him for the rest of the show. There's plenty of times with Paul. I first met Paul or knew about Paul from his newsletter, The Examiner, back in the day. I was a newsletter reader for Meltzer, of course, and I go back to from the mid-'80s, early to mid-'80s. So I always saw his name in the reader's page to try to trade tapes. And then a few years later, he started his own newsletter. So I got his newsletter at the time, and that's how I first knew of him.
Oh, cool. Larry, did you have any questions?
Yeah, I was fascinated, Mike, by your talking about the Clementon, New Jersey shows for Sharp, Larry Sharp, and Dennis Corluzzo. Could you give us kind of a flavor of what that was like doing those shows?
It was the shows were like very, you know, independent shows, of course. Both Larry and Dennis were crazy. Larry was a stickler, and Dennis was Dennis Corluzzo, if you ever knew Dennis Corluzzo. Those Clementon shows had a lot of great talent on them at the time. They would book names every once in a while for special occasions, and they brought in guys like, you know, Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler, and I was there a few times, and I saw Jerry wrestle Chris Benoit and Terry Funk wrestle Chris Benoit. So he had names on the show, but there was a lot of great local underneath Jersey independent talent. Even Sabu worked on those early shows. He came in. There was Chris Candido, the Headbangers, who worked as the Spiders, who did like every show that I basically saw in Clementon or shows that Paul worked with. He had a tag team called the Super Jocks, and that's where the towel first came into play, because he was supposed to play a somewhat of a sports agent, but he did that. He did that type of gimmick, but he wore a backwards hat and a towel. And what he would do is he would take the towel and fan the guys, do the old school fan the guys gimmick. And they wrestled Glenn and Chaz, who back then were working as the Spiders before they, before they made it into the big time. But also on those shows were Sandman. In the early Sandman gimmick, where he had the surfboard and the bodysuit, no cigarette, no beer. But those shows were always fun. Bundy was on a lot of those shows because Bundy always worked those early shows for Larry and Dennis, because Larry and Bundy were really close friends, and Bundy was helping train at the Monster Factory at the time.
Mike, I was also very interested in like the whole idea of going to do wrestling shows in, of all places, Maine.
That was interesting. It was around the same time Paul was going to school, because he went to Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
And even while he was in school, he would still do our shows. He would drive down or meet up with his friend Tim Walker, who Tim's probably devastated about Paul. I haven't been able to get a hold of Tim or anything. But Tim is a photographer still to this day, and still does stuff for like the old Aptor mags and stuff. But they used to drive down together, and he would do our shows. But he had an idea. He wanted to do some shows and some spot shows in Maine. And Michael O'Brien and I went up and worked those shows in Maine. Had an interesting crew. I knew he had Rick Fuller, who was an independent guy in Massachusetts. Used some guys in Massachusetts. Paul even worked Moolah and Mae Young on those shows. He was in. They did the old baby bottle angle and the diaper angle, and so they had a lot of fun on those shows. The crowds were not bad, not the greatest, but they were still good and they were still entertained by everything. But Paul worked the matches doing the baby bottle and the old school Mid-South angle with in the diaper angle. So he had fun, and Moolah and Mae Young enjoyed it. They were great. They were great to work with.
Forgive me, I don't remember the baby bottle angle. Could you enlighten?
Oh, Moolah did something with a baby bottle. They put him in a diaper and a baby bottle. They knocked him out. He got knocked out. He was unconscious. So then they put him in a diaper, and then they gave him a baby bottle. And they sat him in the corner, and then they smacked him in the face, and he woke up, and he was in a diaper and sucking on a baby bottle.
Oh, God.
Well, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Obviously the information you provided for Larry's article was just so invaluable. And I am sorry. I'm sorry for your guys' loss. I didn't really know Paul Adams. I just had a couple of chance meetings with him, but I am sorry for your guys' loss. And I thank you for coming on and just doing such a lovely tribute to him.
Thank you. I'm going to miss him. Last week I was thinking of him because it was the 20-year anniversary of the Heroes pay-per-view, and I sent him a message because we kept in touch. I hadn't talked to him for about maybe 3 to 4 months, and so I sent him an email, and I wanted to check in on him, check in on them, I'm sorry. And then that afternoon I heard he passed away, and I was just in shock and utter disbelief. I still couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know his mom and dad, because he was an only child, and I know his mom and dad taking it real bad, but I really, you know, I like I said, I'm still in shock and utter disbelief. I'm going to miss him, though.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mike. I mean, you know, whatever the solace that we can take is that, boy, that guy lived a life. It doesn't sound like he left any button unpushed or any rock unturned. So
yeah,
that's a wonderful thing.
I know the last I talked to him, I knew he was having a lot of pain in his back and in his neck, and he was having trouble with one of his arms. And I knew he was planning on getting something taken care of, but he was just waiting for the right time, and he didn't know when he would get it done. But he always kept himself busy. I even know he was promoting boxing down at the Tennessee Fair, at the Nashville Fair, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He told me he did some boxing and promoted some boxing that did pretty well. And he always, kept his finger on the pulse of everything. He was a very, very smart, driven, and pushed individual guy. He would do anything for anybody to help anybody and to get things over. I mean, he worked so hard at so many things. I mean, he postered flyer towns. I mean, ever since he was young. So, I mean, he did everything. There's nothing that he didn't do. And, you know, I'm just still upset about everything.
Mm.
But thank you guys for the time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Woof. Man, oh man, oh man. I mean, that kind of consummate hustler guy, you know, it's what a lot of people purport to be, but there were precious little left, and he was definitely one of them.
Well, yeah.
Sounds like I'm thinking about the diaper and the baby bottle. Boy, if you've been involved in wrestling for any length of time and you worked as a manager or that kind of thing, if you haven't had to do that kind of thing, then you didn't really do the damn thing, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, sir. So what's next, Larry?
We've got Saw announcer Michael Graham joining us now. Hey, Michael.
Please, yes.
Hey, how are you guys? Yeah,
fine.
I go by either. I've got plenty of names, plenty of aliases. So I'll answer to about anything. I appreciate you guys getting in touch tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. No, thank you. I mean, Paul Adams, how did you meet him, and what was your initial impressions of the man?
I would have met Paul Adams in 1996. I was I actually at the gym I was working at the time. I ran into Mike Rapata, the Colorado Kid, and found out that he was in pro wrestling, and I had been in trying to get into radio. I'd done a little TV and wanted to always be, you know, Jim Ross or Tony Schiavone. I wanted to be a wrestling announcer. So I talked to him and ended up getting, you know, just the ring announcer thing at the Nashville Armory. And I would have met Paul on the first show that I did. And I do recall, man, we became friends very quickly. We were just both at a sort of level that you don't find a lot. You know, it's like unspoken jokes between us and things like that. It was almost literally almost immediate when I met him. And, you know, he knew that I was so into promotion and self-promotion and things like getting into radio and things like that, understanding advertising and things like that. And business-wise, we also kind of were right hand and left hand almost pretty quickly. He ended up, you know, we more than once were roommates, actually, he and I. We have been very, very close for a long, long time. Yeah, yeah, he's, you know, I was listening to your last guest. It was fantastic. It was so great to hear those stories. And, you know, I wish I could convey how much he'll be missed, but how much he's left behind, because he's such the glue in so many relationships. I'm talking like hundreds of people must know thousands of people because Paul Adams introduced them, and they became friends because Paul Adams knew they would. I wish I don't know. It's really tough, you guys. It's really tough. It's really tough.
You know, I always say that the hidden thing for like young wrestlers and young wrestling people is wrestling is social. You know, a lot of the protocols are set up to force interaction, because at the end of the day, it's people like Paul Adams linking people together that make wrestling what it is. We always thought, we'd be nothing without the fans, and we'd be nothing without this. And all of that's true. But at the end of the day, it's guys like Paul Adams who know people who are the ones that ice break, the ones that like, we're going to go to Maine, or, you know, I'm going to do this crazy thing and have huge successes, but also huge disastrous failures, but then recover from all of it. And it's introducing this person to that person and bringing these people together. And like you said, he seemed to have, I mean, just the impression that I'm getting is he seemed to have this innate sense. You can't teach this kind of thing, right? Where he just senses this person and this person just make a good match to me. And he's like, I'm going to bring them together. And I mean, everybody's story seems to correspond with, and then he hooked me up with this person, and then that person ended up becoming my running buddy. You know, it's amazing. It's an amazing gift.
You really, it's like he's the hub of a giant spoked wheel of relationships. It really is. It's, there have got to be, I can't even begin, I don't even want to guess a number of guys, girls out there that got where they wanted to be through him, through his switchboard operating, you know? And I can't even tell you. And, you know, it was great being friends with him, too, because, and I heard your previous caller say this, he would do anything for anybody to the point it would actually hurt him sometimes. He really, really would. But when you were his friend, there was, man, I guess I'm going to gush a little bit, and I shouldn't apologize for it. When you were his friend, it was kind of an honor. It was kind of like the perfect example, and I've been thinking about this all damn week, because when I heard that he passed, I was at work, and it just, the rest of the day was a bit of a blur, you know, and I got home, and you guys probably know, Paul Adams is one of, if he's not the biggest Yankee fan that ever was, he's crushed, okay? He's a huge, huge New York Yankee fan. And I hate the Yankees with every fiber of my being. They are the bane of my existence. And it was the greatest fight between us, that Yankee thing. And Alex Rodriguez was the center of that, because that's my most hated Yankee of all the hated Yankees I've ever had. And he would go to New York, okay? He would go to New York every summer and do everything he could to take in at least one ball game at Yankee Stadium. And every time he went, he would take a picture of that damn A-Rod either on the field or the scoreboard and text it to me and say, greatest player of all time, as the caption. He must have done that seriously five times to me, man. And I just, you know, I'd send back a whatever, some whirlwind of cuss words. But, you know, you just heard the fellow before me speaking to you guys, and I was there and was introduced to so many cool people because of Paul. I know his friend network. I know the people he knew, and to think that he was sitting there in that stadium and was thinking of me in that moment is like a big deal. And that's the best way I can tell you how important.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? It's a big deal when somebody that's that important to so many people consider you at least that important, and that's a big deal. And I'm gonna miss him like absolutely crazy, man. You know, he's just, I'm gonna miss him like crazy. You know?
It's something else. So you worked for him as – so what are the capacities you worked with Paul with? So an announcer, what else did you do? Because, I mean, it's
whatever
never one thing, right?
Whatever he would ask me to do. Whatever he would ask me to do, and it went from – oh, guys, man, I was there the night. You know, we had in SAW, which was maybe the most fun I have ever had in my life, for the most part. Of course, there were very difficult moments. But, man, it was just so much fun. So much fun. And so it felt worthwhile to kind of push something that we believed in, you know, Paul and I. And we were really, you know, I was always right there, man, doing what, and like I said, do about anything. And, yeah, I was, you know, I don't know if you remember, we had a security guy named Big Dollar for a while. And Paul Adams and I were out at McFadden's Club on 2nd Avenue in Nashville one evening, just enjoying the evening because we did such things, and we saw a little person that was in the corner, and Paul looked at me, and he goes, "Dude, that guy's got to work for us." And I looked at him, I said, "Well, let's go talk to him." And before the night was over, that guy had our number. I think Paul might have already given him like an advance. And he was named Half Dollar to go with the Big Dollar. That was the guy on the security team. So, yeah, man. I mean, it was, you know, it was that kind of thing all the time. It was just the best. And I did. I worked as his, you know, I worked as the announcer on SAW and took complete and utter direction from him. You know, would help set up and break down. You know, I'm not going to say that I swept the ring exactly, but, you know, I would help before and after the shows. Even at the Stadium Inn, wow, and things like that, you know. We were just, hey, man, in the NAW days when I was working with him for Burt Prentice, I should say, we actually would get done with a show on a Thursday night, and we would drive to it was a TV studio, but it was in a house that was over on the east side of Nashville, and we would drive there and put together that we wouldn't sleep that evening. We would take the raw footage in, put the tape together, and then have a show ready to take to the CW network to air on Saturday morning. Cause they had to have it like 24 hours in advance or something.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's the only way you could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And the famous, the famous episode that, Tommy Wildfire Rich bled so much, we had to put it in black and white. That was our thing. We had the episode where I wasn't there, quote unquote, and Paul Adams and the flamboyant Farron Fox, whom I love so much, so dearly, they took over the studio, and it was seriously, if that exists anywhere, you have to find that. It's riotously funny. Those two just clowning about, you know, and then you think of Paul and all those great skits he did with David Young on SAW.
Yeah.
And I feel so much for David Young because.
Yeah.
That was a special relationship, man, and I'm very, very that hurts my heart to think that's over because those two were and they're both great people. It's just tough. Just tough. You know.
Well, man,
just tough.
I can't thank you enough for coming on. I know I could hear in your voice how difficult this was for you, but I think you really did Paul proud, and clearly you gave me a complete picture of what it was like to be friends with Paul Adams, and what a wonderful tribute to the man. And sorry for your loss, of course, but man,
very kind
stories.
Of you, man. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I could sit here for, I don't even know how much longer. It's hard to even make it, you know, to think of a specific moment. It's really just more just happy to, you know, hurt so much because you love so much, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's cool. And this was a bit cathartic as well. So I appreciate you guys letting me come on here and blubber a little bit. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And just now, whenever you see Alex Rodriguez for the rest of your life, you can.
That was already a thing, man. That was already a thing. I was reaching for my phone and even Alex Rodriguez is doing the studio show for these playoffs, and I'm like, this freaking guy. Oh, Paul Adams loves this guy. Thank you. Hey, Larry, it's great. It's great to hear from you. I'm sorry about the circumstances, but I'm glad to hear you're doing good too, man.
Thank
awesome.
You. You too. You too.
All right. You guys have a great rest of your night. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Freaking awesome. awesome.
You know,
and
that,
yeah,
we've got a couple folks waiting, but I want to mention, you know, that sawmill building that they taped in Millersville was something else. I mean, Dan Masters was not exaggerating. The place was a bakery. It had been a bakery, and somehow
what?
They made it into a TV studio out of this bakery. And it was the dressing room made the upstairs dressing room in Porterdale look luxurious. I mean, it was, I couldn't believe they could cram those people in there. It was so small, that dressing room they had in that place. And then there was the night they did the angle where Mark Anthony literally, I don't know how they did this, but he chainsawed his way into the building from the back for TV. That was pretty wild. That was some pretty wild stuff they came up with there. But that was quite a place. That was a special place to go to watch wrestling.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, we got David on the line.
Awesome. Please, yes.
David.
What's up,
are you
guys?
There?
Yes.
Hey, David.
I've been listening to all the stories, man. It's so awesome to hear he touched so many people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't help but, I mean, I remember whenever Larry would report about the Saw shows and things like that, I just remember thinking to myself, like, this stuff is so crazy. I mean, never did – when Larry wrote about stuff, I would generally not go out of my way to check it out because I was doing my own thing. And so, you know, you kind of have this competition thing, even though it makes no sense, right, where it's like, why would I go look at that fucking show? You know, like, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But then, like, it was the description of anything that you and Paul did together. And I was like – fuck. Like, there's no way it's that funny, or there's no way it's that crazy. And then I would watch
it
and I'd go, like,
never been
yeah.
That funny if we had anything planned. Like, he would send me, like, a four-page and I would read it and I would say, oh, well, fuck, I'm never going to say this. I did not realize it. So I would just show up and he'd say, you got your script? And I was like, yeah, we're not going to say that today, Paul. It would be livid that I just didn't even bother to read his script. And then we would go out there and just play off of each other and just tear everything down, and it was just amazing. He was so funny. You know, I cried for 4 days. Like, I literally have cried for 4 days. And
yeah.
He would be so mad at me for crying over him because he would expect me to make fun of him for dying first. I mean, he really,
yeah.
really would. I mean, he would want me to make fun of him for going first because he sent me a eulogy that he was going to read at my funeral, and it had pause in it for applause that I was dead. I woke up one day. We lived in the same complex in Nashville, and we used to text each other every day because we were on opposite sides of the complex. And he would literally say to me, don't make me walk down there and whip your ass. And he would quit every day knowing that neither one of us were going to go out the door and actually walk down that place because it was too far to walk. Literally every day. I woke up one day and there was knocking on the door, and I opened the door and it was the police with the neighbor. And the neighbor was like, man, somebody in a station wagon pulled up and threw bologna all over your car. I said, yeah, I just needed to warn you guys. It's okay. Don't worry about it. I got it. And then the tank war started. That was a fucking nightmare. I mean, literally, I walked down there with the cat litter box, and I dumped the whole thing of cat litter in front of his door. And he thought the apartment complex had put something in front of his door to keep him from slipping on the ice. So he walked through all the cat shit. And gets in his car and gets it all in his car. He was so mad about that. God, he was mad for weeks. I mean, we just used to do things to taunt each other constantly. And then the Facebook stuff alone was just a nightmare. I still get stuff that comes back on my Facebook every day. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, Jesus, did I really say that? But if you know him, you know he provoked me to say something that bad. I'll ever have in this lifetime. I can't even put it into words how big the loss is. But, I mean, I refuse to be sad now. Like, I can't do that for him. And he wouldn't be sad. I really don't think he would. I mean, because there's just too many good stories between me and him. I can tell. I mean, I'm the only person, and this is pretty much how we met, is we would get fired within the same time periods from Dirk. Fire me and bring Paul in, and then fire Paul and bring me back in, and we would keep missing each other. And then Paul had heard that I was the only person in the history of Burt Prentice's shows to show up 4 hours early and still miss the show. And he just had to meet me after that.
When did you realize that you and Paul were like, I mean, that you just clicked? Is there a moment where you were like, you know what, this is my motherfucker right here? Like, when was that moment?
I don't even remember how it started. Like, we started the A-Team. He literally brought me in to be the problem solver for the A-Team. And
okay.
The vignettes just clicked. The first time we did one, it was just hilarious. And there's so many things that didn't make it to TV because the editor sucked and he would lose the tapes and stuff like that. We filmed one in Nashville. It may be the most humiliating one I've done, where Paul had wanted to celebrate us getting a win over Chase Stevens. And he told me to go get a couple of suits from the costume shop. He said, "Women love a man in uniform, Dave, so get those." And then you hear the Saturday Night Fever music, and me and him walk around the corner on Broad Street in Nashville on a Saturday night, and you know how crowded that can be. And when we walk around the corner, we're both wearing sailor suits with sailor hats on. Down the street filming this, and we're pointing around and waving at people like we're running for president. It was the funniest thing I've ever saw in my entire life. We literally had to keep stopping just to laugh at each other.
Speaking of laughing, David, what did you think when he pitched I assume that he pitched you the muscle suit idea, or was that your idea?
No, actually it was my idea, and I'll tell you exactly how it happened. We were at a show, and we showed up early, like really early. I don't even know why. And it was right around Halloween. And they were selling costumes at the show. And I walked over and I saw the muscle suit, and I picked it off the rack. And I walked over to Paul. I said, "Can I wear this tonight?" And he stopped and he turned his head really, really slow. And he got his face really close to mine. And he goes, "Would you?" A half later, he actually let me take it off. It took a year and a half. Oh, that muscle suit was the greatest thing ever, though, because it was just insane. The bad part about the muscle suit is when I would sweat, it would weigh like 70 pounds by the time I got out of the ring. But, I mean, it was just instant heat. Instant heat. And then we did the thing at the slaughterhouse, which is just...
Oh, God.
Ad-libbing. We had no plans or anything when we got there. We just filmed it as we went along.
You're kidding. That was all. That was ad-lib, that whole thing?
Every bit of it. Yeah, there was no script. There was nothing. That was just us playing off each other.
That is up on the internet, Steve, if you've never seen it. The rest in peace for Old Blue, the muscle suit, is must-viewing.
Yeah, because we did the muscle suit like it was a person. Paul was my life coach, and he was trying to make me have more self-confidence. Yeah. He was the best. I was just actually on the phone with Reno Riggins right before this. They're working on a memorial thing for Paul in a couple of weeks in Nashville. I don't have any details yet, but he said he's definitely working on it.
That's amazing.
You have no idea,
David,
some of the fun stuff that he's done.
Yeah. David, what's something about Paul that, I mean, since you were so close to him, what's something about him or a side of him that you got to see that he usually didn't show other people?
let me think. I mean, there were so many different sides to Paul. We did a
thing
for the NBA one time. We did the NBA, and he was really, really big into that. Like Michelle, she used to come to the shows all the time, and she was part of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And she did the NBA walk, and we actually went and did the walk with them that day. And we had a really good time, and he got me that day. I mean, they made shirts for us to wear because we were on Michelle's team. And he told them that I wear a small, you know, even though I'm like 260 pounds. So I had like a T-shirt that come up over my belly and looked like I was wearing a tank top the whole time I'm there. We get in there and we start doing the walk, and me and Paul tried to cheat and treat it like a race. And we tried to cut across the rink at the Preds hockey arena, and we went across the ice, and both of us were so damn crippled up, we couldn't make it across the ice, and we lost. We actually tried to cheat. I still have tons of pictures from that. I mean, I could send you tons of them of him, me in that tight-ass pink shirt, and Paul. I think I took a picture of him standing next to a cornhole sign with an arrow pointing at him or something like that with that pink shirt on. But he was the best, man. I mean, I can say a million bad things about him. Don't get me wrong, and I have.
You sure really have.
Yeah, he was really my best friend. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better friend than him. I remember I went through a breakup, and he called me, and he said, "I don't want you to talk. I don't want to hear your problems. I just want you to know this bitch never deserved you." And that's the end of his story, and he hung up. That was it. That's all I got from him.
Fucking microwave therapy by Paul. It's like we're gonna skip six stages of grief here. we're just gonna get to the revelation and moving on.
Great. We don't want to hear any more about this. This is the last time we'll speak of it. But it was just the best, man. I mean, I used to make fun of him for working for the fair, and I used to tell him he was like screaming for the yak woman and pixie dust spreader at the Tilt-A-Whirl and shit like that. And then he started working for the Nashville Sound, so I started calling him Baseball Fetcher, where he had to go out and fetch a baseball or foul ball fetcher. That's another one I used to use on him too.
David, have you been in touch with him recently? What was your recent interactions with him like?
A couple of weeks ago, to be honest with you, he called me, and he wanted Santel called me first, and they're shutting down the hotel that we used to film at. What was the name of it? Something Inn.
The Stadium Inn?
The Stadium Inn. They're going to implode it.
Good.
They tear it down. Santel wanted me and Paul to get together with him and go film us going to watch them implode the building. And we were going to try to make it to where we were actually going to go try to spend the night at the hotel, and when we got there, the building just collapsed. But, yeah, he actually called me a couple of weeks ago just to talk to me about that, all the plans he had for it, and now I guess it'll never come to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talked all the time. I mean, he would just call me. Anytime we thought of something funny, we would call each other. This happened on Christmas one year. I started drinking, and Paul was in New York with his family. And Gary Douglas, do you know him? He was a fan that used to come to the shows, and Paul used to love torturing him on Facebook. And I started drinking, and I put up a picture of Lyle Lovett and Gary Douglas side by side. They look just alike, but Gary Douglas. And this, all of a sudden, he texted Paul and cursed Paul out because I put up the picture. And Paul said, "I'm in church with my family." And Paul texted me and he said, "This may be the greatest thing you've ever done." He said, "You got me and you blocked, and I'm in church." Nobody else could ever make this happen. But yeah, to this day, I'm blocked off of his Facebook.
I just, when you said Lyle Lovett, I just figured out who you meant. The guy who yes. Yes. Yes, I know Gary Douglas. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is there a better endorsement that he looks like him? That's what triggered Larry's memory.
I knew I was dead on with it when I put it up there.
Yeah.
The truth is, everybody wants the truth until you give it to them, Larry.
Oh,
but,
golly.
I mean, we did so many funny things, man. And him and Reno are funny together, too. I mean, Reno Riggins may be one of the funniest guys I know also.
Yeah.
And Paul has always had this story. And I've stolen this story a million times and told it like it was me and Paul because I don't want to let a little thing like the truth get in the way of a good story. But Paul and Reno were at a restaurant one day. And Vince Gill walked into the restaurant. And as soon as Vince Gill came into the restaurant, Reno yelled, Vinny! And he jumps up and he walks over and shakes his hand and starts talking to him. And he's like, Paul, stop being rude. Come say hey to Vinny. And Paul gets up, walks over, and talks to him for a second. And he's like, well, guys, I've got a to-go order, and I got to get back home to the wife. It's really good seeing you again. And shakes Reno's hand and Paul said him and Reno walked back to the table and sat down, and he said Reno just starts eating his food, and he said, I'll ask, how do you know Vince Gill? And said Reno looked up and goes, oh, I don't know Vince Gill. I just knew for a matter of fact that Vince Gill didn't know for sure if he knew me or not.
Yeah, I can see Reno doing that.
Oh, God. We were in a bar one night, and Chase Stevens got in a fight. I know you're shocked. And
no shit.
It was literally one of those things where it was the same thing always. Chase punched the guy one time, and the guy was unconscious.
Right.
And the guy landed on Paul. Like, Paul literally caught him and went down with him. And while he's laying there, Paul pulled a Saul business card out of his pocket, stuck it in the guy's shirt pocket, and then got up all of the
Good. You're a hell of a worker, kid. There you go.
You want to learn to take a punch, come work with us. But no, he was awesome, guys. I can't tell you enough stories about Paul because, I mean, I have a million of them.
And he was a great storyteller. He loved to tell stories.
One of the best, and he was so clever. Like, I mean, he really was. I mean, he was probably one of the most clever people I knew, which aggravated me to no end because I have to work at it. He was just clever. But yeah, we literally got so deep under each other's skin that we wanted to choke each other most days. But we would keep calling each other. It just never stopped. He would literally call me at like 3 in the morning to make sure I was asleep. He would literally answer the phone. He'd be like, I just wanted to make sure you were sleeping okay, buddy. Talk to you later.
Oh, my God, man. So great. David, I was telling Larry, you know, because like 35, 40 minutes ago, or before the show went on, you know, Larry was talking and he was like, you know, he's like, Bert listened, but then he hung up and I don't know if he was upset or he just couldn't do it. And then he's like, and I haven't heard from David. And I can hear how upset Larry was that he hadn't heard, because I mean, it would have really not been an adequate tribute to Paul Adams, not to diminish any of the guests or anything, but like you're his best friend, you clearly. And I'm so glad that you called. I really am. And I think it's just a wonderful thing that you and Paul had. That's just so unique. It can never be recaptured. It's so unique and it's so special and wonderful. And I can't thank you enough for calling in for this, because it's just been a delight. It's just been really wonderful, you know.
Well, there's not a problem at all. I mean, anytime I can talk about him, I definitely will.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was my best friend, and I'll never have another friend like him, ever. I mean, I don't think I'll ever be as close to anybody as I was him. And it happened gradually. It wasn't like we just woke up one day and said, "You want to be best friends?" I mean, you know, it's
Yeah, you guys had a unique chemistry, you two guys.
Yeah, and it just kept getting better and better and better. Every time we were around each other, we were always plotting against somebody else. We were just always looking for a way to make
it. Yes.
Yes. Like Doogie, we used to love that we could go on Doogie's Facebook and take over his entire page. Nobody would talk to Doogie anymore. They were just talking to us. And it used to drive him insane. He had me blocked for a long time, too. But, I mean, we would do that to people constantly. We just loved the fact that we could go on somebody's Facebook and just take over the entire page and start a big fight and then leave. And they're sat there with 5,000 comments from people that hate them. We were constant at heels. I mean, we were constantly just looking for ways to get under people's skin.
Oh man. Well, David, I know
on somebody, we would literally call each other and I'd be like, "Guess what happened to so and so?" And he'd go, "Oh, this is going to kill him. I can't wait."
I will neither confirm nor deny that I have similar relationships with people.
Yes. But
it's so great.
I'm going to try my best to be at his funeral Friday or his service Friday. I'm going to try really hard.
Yeah.
And hopefully get to say goodbye.
Absolutely.
It's going to be in New York. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Reno sent me the information for the funeral. I put it up on my Facebook wall.
Okay. Okay.
Cool.
And I'll be looking for that information about the memorial in Nashville then to follow.
Yes. Reno and Jason James are working on that as we speak.
Great. Great.
Well, David,
thanks.
Again,
thank
I just can't thank you enough. And, of course, I'm
thank
sorry
you guys for, having me. I really
for your loss.
This. But I really needed this this week. I mean, I really did. I needed to talk about it.
It was amazing. I mean, I can't – this show, if somebody had said – you know, what's your biggest belly laughs going to be? It certainly would have been the memorial show, but it is. I mean, I'm laughing and I'm crying. And, you know, the best thing about your relationship with Paul is I think there's a number of people listening that can go like, either they have a relationship that's somewhat similar. Nothing can quite capture you and Paul's relationship. But I think there are people who can kind of see themselves in it a little bit. And then there's the people that wish they had it. So I'm glad you got to have it. It's wonderful.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, like I said, I'll never have another friend like him. Like, he was literally every day plotting on. We got pleasure from each other's displeasure. If we weren't making the other one miserable, we weren't happy. So, he used to tell me, like, "Hey, call me at 3 o'clock," and I'd call him at 3 o'clock, and he'd send me the voicemail, and then all of his voicemails would be full, and that would just piss me off to no end. I'd be like, "Oh, he's nice, and I'm gonna make a Facebook status about this really quick." But I mean, he just did little things that got to you constantly.
Yeah.
There was this one time, and I still have a picture of the store. I took a picture of the store. He was at an ATM. He said that there was a line behind him, and he was trying to check his balance first and said people were getting aggravated. And he said he tried to fart just to make the people behind him mad, and said when he did, he'd been taking antibiotics and shit shot down both of his legs. He said, "Dave, this was extreme for even me." He had his leg in the bathroom and cleaned himself up with his underwear.
One thing about you guys, when it came to doing stuff for the show, you would go to there was you would stop at nothing. You were willing to look so ridiculous Whatever it took. You'd be ridiculous.
Well, I worked for TNA for 7 years, and I lost pride years ago. That was no
fair. Oh, my God.
But the last thing that he ever said to me, he texted me. He said, I don't need you to put this on Facebook, but I was walking out of Walgreens, and I tripped and hit my head on a garbage dumpster and got a concussion and had to go to the hospital. I don't even know what happened. I was going hiking that day, and there was this old person with a walker wearing a plastic bicycle helmet while they were walking with the walker. And I took a picture of him, and I texted him. I said, hey, are you in Cleveland, Tennessee right now? And he texted me back and said, no. And I sent him that picture. I said, it must be some other retard they put a fucking bicycle helmet on. His joke, that was the worst part. He texted Doogie one night, and he said, hey, are you walking down Broad Street? Because the hockey game was letting out. And he said, no. He said, oh, must be another faggot in a Flyers jersey.
Oh, Jesus.
It was just constant with us. I mean, we were constantly doing things like that to each other and to other people. I'm going to really miss that.
Well, David, thanks so much for calling in, and I'm glad this was good for you.
Thank you so much. I needed to laugh, so I really appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, all David.
Right,
all right,
bye bye. I think we've got Scott
Please.
Hensley
yes.
holding on to who's been holding on patiently. But before I bring him on, if you'll hold on patiently for a second longer, do you remember the night that Paul Adams came to the 20-year to PCW with me?
Vaguely remind me though. So
well, he came with Vordell, and
yeah,
they were in. What I remember about it is not so much the show. What I remember, well, one thing is that he liked the Washington Bullets and he wanted to book them. The other thing,
Which
what I
he
remember
did,
was the
right, yeah,
I think yeah, that's right, he did. And then, but they were at this. He and Vordell were staying at this dive hotel called the Decatur Inn.
Oh
I mean,
God!
This place, yes, they had. So I go
the
over there to meet
Decatur.
Him to come over to the show, and. They're in this. I'm thinking, why the hell, of all the places to choose to stay, the Decatur Inn, right by that cemetery there, and was the room smelled
terrible.
And they were shooting a promo, and they were shooting a video of stuff about Vordell in there. I thought, what a setting to do this in. Anyway, that's just what I remember about that. That's what I remember about his trip to PCW. I know he liked the show though.
Yeah, I mean, it was nutty, so
right.
You and I had that special bond. So, you know, I'm actually glad. I mean, I know, but please bring Scott Hensley on. I know Scott's going to be like, man, I got to follow David Young. But I actually think it's very appropriate that Scott Hensley closes it out with us. So,
well,
please.
He's here.
Yes, sir.
Scott.
How you doing, Scott?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I've really enjoyed hearing all the Paul stories, and I can relate to some of them, but not as personal as Doogie and David. And yes, why in the world would you bring me on after David Young?
Well, I was just going to say, I think why it's appropriate is because your story with Paul is, I want to hear it, you know, like how he basically started you in pro wrestling or what that capacity was, but now you're the guy who helps give other people a boost and a start and, you know, publicizes them. So, I mean, what a better tribute to Paul than the people that he touched goes on and sort of expands his work. And there's the baby, there's more of your work that's growing up and expanding as well that we can hear. So, so Scott, was that the first show that you worked for? Was the Paul Adams show, or what was it?
At that time, I'd already done Alabama and some local Chattanooga stuff like NWA Chattanooga, but I hadn't really branched outside of that. And so we had a local guy that was a referee, and I was buddies with a guy named Christian Haim, who was working for Paul up in Nashville. And Christian said, "Hey, I'm going to work Ricochet this weekend." And I said, "Hey, I'm going to buy a ticket to watch you work Ricochet this weekend." And so being from Middle Tennessee, like, it's no big deal for me just to drive up there. And then I realized that, or in talking to my buddy, who was a referee, it was Graham Long. He was an Empire referee. And sorry, I'm out of breath. I'm carrying my baby son around trying to entertain him. But in working with Graham Long, he said, "Hey, my girlfriend lives up in Nashville, and she's never seen me referee." And I said, "Hey, let me get Paul's number, and I'll give him a call and see if he needs a referee," because in working on shows, I realize how good a referee, or how valuable and rare a good referee can be sometimes. And so, especially one that just wants to work for the opportunity. And so I called Paul, and he said, "Yeah." He goes, "I could use a referee." He goes, "I also need a ring announcer." And so it was just like fate, and it was a great relationship. I went up there, and you know, I was going to pay to watch his show, and now all of a sudden, you know, I worked, and we didn't talk money. So like, I was about to leave, and he goes, "Hey," he goes, "hang around." And so I waited a few minutes, and then he came over, handed me money, and he said, "Would you like to be my ring announcer going forward?" I said, "Sure," and he gave me some dates, and from there on out, like, I got to work at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds, which, you know, I grew up going to TNA there. I grew up watching, you know, some Burke shows there and stuff, and it meant a lot to me to get to go and do shows in that building. And we did the Old Hickory Community Center, and I got to work with guys like Luke Gallows and Chase Stevens that I grew up watching, and of course, I got to watch Ricochet, and he actually worked Vordell Walker in a match where the ring broke, and so they just ran around and like jumped off of everything in that building. It was awesome. But Paul was more than just like a boss. He was a mentor, and it really helped me to see what guys valued. You know, he had guys traveling in from like Maryland and some different places. Like, one of those guys is Brandon Scott, who is he's worked for WWE several times now, but I think he won one of the big Northeastern tournaments. But Paul would just bring all these guys in that were just young, hungry guys, and then he would pair them up with like established names like James Storm and, you know, local guys like Gallows, and he would have guys like Sean Schultz and the Washington Bullets and Vordell, and it was just it was great. And he also was a guy that would teach guys stuff. Like, I got to watch him sit and teach the Tate Twins how to do promos. I mean, it was a unique experience.
Yeah, man. I mean, those guys that can kind of, I mean, he could do it all, and he was very free and effusive with his opportunities given. And I mean, it's one thing for certain shows. I see shows all the time where like, yeah, we help guys out all the time, but there's shows that tend to not matter. But the fact that he was so prominent made it all the more amazing how open he was to things. I don't know if we're going to see his like again, honestly. I mean, Larry, with your repeated contact with him over the years, did he change into that guy, or was he just always that guy who just was like, you know, he was just the sort of center of the storm, you know, the ringmaster type? Was that always how he was?
Well, I mean, it changed because of the change in his role. It just sort of grew and expanded over the years because, you know, he was doing all that stuff in the Northeast, but when he first came to Nashville, he was just a ringside manager. But it didn't take long before he was doing commentary, and you heard you know, Doogie talk about they were then putting together the TV, and you know it didn't take long for Bert to see what his abilities were and begin to have him doing all kinds of things. Yeah. Scott, did you do the Knoxville stuff with for Paul and Marquez? I can't remember.
Yes, Paul brought me out there, and that was an adventure. Like that could be like a 6-series tipping point. Like it was a mess, but it was a lot of fun at the same time. I will give one funny story. So
yes,
at the fairgrounds, like Paul had the deal with the fairgrounds to bring shows there, and so he brought in Psychosis, which is like Psychosis 2. This was not WCW Psychosis. But he brought in a bilingual ring announcer also. And this guy was like completely TV ready. He was bilingual. He was like the most professional guy I've ever seen. And I asked Paul, I was like, hey, that guy's really good. And or Paul would always ask me, he's like, what do you think about that? Or what do you think about this guy? And he goes, what do you think about that ring announcer guy there? I was like, yeah, he's really good. I said, why am I here? He goes, oh, because you're cheap and you know what you're doing. So I don't know how much he paid that guy or what that guy's wrestling interests were, but I had the competitive advantage there apparently.
Yeah, that sounds like Paul.
That sounds like Tennessee, too.
Yeah.
But there was another incident that I brought up where so there was a group of Derek King Enterprises where it was Derek King,
yes,
Drew Haskins, and they had Sister Ophelia with them, which was this lady that had a big pregnant belly. And as I posted about it on Facebook, like, she kayfabed that thing like crazy. Like, there were workers on the show that asked her how far along she was. But, like, I had seen her pull the belly out before. And then somebody pointed out, they were like, well, we took a hiatus. They were like, and your belly's the same size. They were like, what are you going to say? And Paul goes, oh, just don't say that you're still pregnant. Just say you're pregnant again.
Oh,
he was,
yeah,
so quick-witted like that.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
God. Sister Ophelia, I forgot all about that. Jesus.
So, Scott, what was it your interactions with Paul? Like, when you think back to what made you want to go from being a ring announcer to running your own show, really? Like, that's what you're doing. Does your interactions with Paul make you think that was possible even? I mean, because it had to seem just crazy. I mean, you went from a guy who was, here, I'm going to buy a ticket to the show. Now you're ring announcing for the show. Now you're ring announcing for all the shows. I mean, at what point did you yourself go, you know what, I kind of want to run a thing, and I think I can run a thing? What was the spark for that?
Well, it was always something that I wanted to do growing up. Like, there was a time,
yeah,
when for a career day at school when I was in high school, like, I called Bert Prentice to do a paper on, like, what I wanted to do. Wrestling related. It was all related to wrestling, I promise. But
yeah.
So, but, you know, my wrestling dads were really, like, Ace Rockwell and Will,
mm-hmm,
Owens in Alabama, and then Dan Wilson in Chattanooga, and then Paul up in Nashville. But
yeah,
I got to sit under their learning trees, and, you know, it's so hard now. Like, those guys had so much experience, and now you look at shows, and it's like the veteran on the show is 30 years old.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And the guy running the show may be 25 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I feel so
fortunate to work with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I always joked when I would be in other people's locker rooms, I'm like, not only am I the oldest person here, I'm like, I'm also the tallest guy on the roster.
Like, I feel you.
And I was like, wrestling's a different thing. But Matt, Scott, I thank you so much for coming on. I just think this was such a – Larry, I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to break kayfabe or whatever. Did you imagine 45 minutes before we went on that this was the show that we were going to have at all?
No, I'm so thank you to all the people who called in and made this so good. I really appreciate it.
So great. Thank you so much, Scott. It's a really wonderful
guys.
Way to end up the show. So thank you. That's great. Well, this was our tribute to Paul Adams, consummate carny. I mean, he's a real wrestling person, and just hearing all the stories and stuff. I mean, I feel at a loss in the sense that it's like, God, there's just so few guys like that, and there's really nobody like him from the sounds of it. And of course, our hearts go out to all the people feeling the loss about Paul. And you know, Larry's going to keep you in touch as far as where the tributes are happening, both in Tennessee and New York, and other things that are going to go on if they put on that tribute show. We'll have all of that information, of course, on Georgia Wrestling History. But, yeah, thank you to all the guests tonight and Larry as well.
I hope this show gave people a little bit of sense about how special Paul was. And, you know, he was a very cool guy. And, as you know, Scott pointed out, I mean, there aren't those kind of guys around, or not too many of them. Like when by the time that Scott met Paul, he was, what, 17, 18 years experience in the business, and had done all these, worked all these different places, done all these different things. And yeah, wrestling needs guys like that. And needs guys who have a mind like that.
I mean, it's when wrestling was wrestling, and Paul was a wrestling guy. And I don't know if that's the greatest tribute or the greatest insult you can give somebody nowadays. but he was that guy. And again, thank you to all the guests. Thank you to the people who listened. And thank you, Paul Adams. I mean, you brought so many people together, and people continue to make wrestling a better thing. And that's because of him. It's a wonderful thing. You made a difference. You know, that's all you can hope for in this life, is that you leave it a little bit better than where you found it. And Paul clearly did that within his circle of influence. So
here, here.
This has been,
thanks.
Yes, sir. But this has been Tipping Point. Thank you to Scott Hensley, who's still on the air with us. Larry Goodman, and I'm Stephen Platinum, and we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.